can't be overstated. Much of life is just plain old difficult. Every day, most of us face a battery of tough issues that are punctuated with rare moments of relief. Today, on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his series called Hand Me Another Brick. We've been tracing the steps of a courageous leader who led his people on an amazing project to rebuild the wall around Jerusalem. Following its completion, they took time to relish their achievement with a grand celebration. Chuck titled his message, Happiness is a Walk on the Wall.
Back in November of 1989, while Americans prepared to celebrate Thanksgiving, East Germans were celebrating their own unforgettable moment of Thanksgiving. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? The wall that had for so long kept them incarcerated in a communist regime was finally coming down. The power of the old party leaders had begun to crumble. Along with that ruling power tumbled its symbol, the Berlin Wall. Almost as quickly and unexpectedly as it had been raised back in August of 1961. Amid the rubble, people erupted with cheering, dancing, singing, crying, and hugging one another in great celebration. It was an unforgettable moment. A festive scene similar to this event occurred thousands of years ago in Nehemiah's day. But on that occasion, the celebration centered on a wall being raised up, not torn down. The Israelites, too, rejoiced with exuberant singing and dancing and great sounds of celebration, their physical expression echoing the emotion in all their hearts. It was a great scene. Chapter after chapter of Nehemiah has been filled with challenges and diligence and setbacks and criticism and sweat and hard work and sorrow as the returning Jews have rebuilt the wall around Jerusalem. But when we get to chapter 12 of Nehemiah, there's a dramatic change. The wall was now completed, and the Jews are responding with intense happiness and great joy. The city overflowed with the sound of singing and the playing of musical instruments such as cymbals and harps and lyres and trumpets and even some of David's musical instruments. This was one great day of celebration. So let's read about it. Turn in your Bibles to this joyful chapter 12, where I'll begin reading for you at verse 27. Nehemiah 12:27. Now at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites from all their places to bring them to Jerusalem so that they might celebrate the dedication with gladness, with hymns of thanksgiving, and with songs to the accompaniment of cymbals, harps, and lyres. So the sons of the singers were assembled from the district around Jerusalem and from the villages of the Netophathites, from Beth Gilgal and from their fields in Geba and Azmaveth, for the singers had built themselves villages around Jerusalem. The priests and the Levites purified themselves. They also purified the people, the gates, and the wall. Then I had the leaders of Judah come up on top of the wall, and I appointed two great choirs, the first proceeding to the right on top of the wall toward the refuse gate. Verse 38, the second choir proceeded to the left, while I followed them with half of the people on the wall above the Tower of Furnaces to the broad wall, and above the gate of Ephraim, by the old gate, by the fish gate, the Tower of Hananel, and the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Sheep Gate, and they stopped at the Gate of the Guard. Then the two choirs took their stand in the house of God. So did I and half of the officials with me. Verse 43, and on that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced because God had given them great joy. Even the women and children rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard from afar. On that day, men were also appointed over the chambers for the stores, the contributions, the first fruits, and the tithes, to gather into them from the fields of the cities the portions required by the law for the priests and Levites. For Judah rejoiced over the priests and Levites who served. For they performed the worship of their God and the service of purification, together with the singers and the gatekeepers, in accordance with the command of David and of his son Solomon. For in the days of David and Asaph, in ancient times, there were leaders of the singers, songs of praise and hymns of thanksgiving to God. And so all Israel in the days of Zerubbabel and Nehemiah gave the portions due the singers and the gatekeepers, as each day required, and set apart the consecrated portion for the Levites, and the Levites set apart the consecrated portion for the sons of Aaron.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the book of Nehemiah with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insight.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck titled, Happiness is a Walk on the Wall.
This message on happiness may seem terribly inappropriate and ill-timed. There is everything at this hour to keep us from feeling happy. The economic scene doesn't bring any happiness. Money has not been tighter. The promise of tomorrow has never been more bleak than at this present hour. There is international famine, which seems to be spreading soon to the national scene, if sociologists are telling us the truth. The crime rate has come to an all-time high. The latest report from the FBI is that every 22 seconds in our nation, a major crime is committed. That means that by the end of the message, somewhere around 100 felonies will have been committed in America. Someone has called our times the aspirin age, and he has not missed it far. Hospitals have never been more expensive nor more overcrowded. It has been proven that over half of those occupying hospital beds are there because of mental or emotional illnesses. This has reached such a critical state that people who are in that field are fearing very much the growing statistic of the suicide death rate. It is now one of the major contributing factors to death. Add to this the ingredients of discouragement, the loss of occupation, the disturbing divorce rate, the breakdown of child training. Mix into that the problems connected with our religious scene, the international affairs as they relate to Israel and the Arab states, and you begin to doubt Ella Wilcox's words, "Laugh and the world laughs with you, weep and you weep alone." It seems rather the one who laughs, laughs alone. And yet, in spite of all of this, and my notes give me twice as much information than I have shared with you regarding our scene, God has brought us to Nehemiah chapter 12. Now, if he has made a mistake, it is his very first one in all of time. I think, rather, he has not made a mistake, but we, in being so preoccupied with our state of affairs, have, in fact, made the mistake. God is doing nothing more this morning than setting our hearts right concerning our times. And I, perhaps as much as anyone here, am very much aware of our times. Nevertheless, in the 12th chapter of Nehemiah, in this difficult time of laughing and rejoicing, we find nothing but that. And I think it holds water because in this day of Nehemiah chapter 12, they faced the same kind of circumstances. They were, in fact, plagued with the most difficult of all sorts of surroundings, aside from war itself. There was nothing to lend their hearts toward rejoicing. Nevertheless, in this 12th chapter, they are filled with joy and laughter. And I hope you won't feel that we are becoming the proverbial ostriches like so many Christians who stick our head in the sand, smile our way through hard times. That's not my desire at all. But in preaching through the book of Nehemiah, the sweep of the truth has brought us to this passage. And so it is in this passage we will land and camp for the next few minutes, and I hope when you leave, your heart will be lighter as you see things more from God's perspective. I do not think that our Heavenly Father, the Lord of this earth, has yet come to a place of frustration. I personally believe that the things of this earth are marching toward His divine, perfect plan, regardless of the scars that we now bear on this earth. All right, having said that, will you occupy your thoughts with verses 27 through 47 of chapter 12? And to be very technical about it, chapter 12, verse 27, really does not tie in with verse 26, but ties in with verse 2 of chapter 11, if you can imagine such a thing. Chapter 11, verse 3 through chapter 12, verse 26 is a parenthesis. In the parenthesis, we have all the color and details of the scene, but there is not any further flow of truth until you get to chapter 12, verse 27. So let me give it to you another way. Chapter 11, verse 2 stops the movement of progress until you get to chapter 12, verse 27, and then you pick it up again. So let's tie them together by reading them together. 11, 2, and the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. Remember last week? The willing unknowns, we call this group. Those who willingly said, we would love to follow God's leading and move into the city that has no lovely surroundings, but we are willing to build ourselves homes, find new friends, jobs, and get underway in a whole new lifestyle, because that's what God wants us to do. Now, look at chapter 12, verse 27. Now, at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem. And so what I find in those two thoughts is this. The people of Israel have begun to move back into the city. Commerce is beginning again. There is a renewed vision, though there is not a renewed scene physically. It's still rather bleak. The wall is finished, broad, stable, strong, well-constructed, well-engineered, well-designed. So the only thing they've got in the city is a protective wall with its gates in place. And having moved into the city and having begun to build their own homes, these volunteers, they are led to dedicate this project to God. And that's what we find in this passage of 12, 27 through 47. We find a dedication of the wall, and we find much more than that. we find a people whose hearts are really rejoicing. Now let's look to begin with at some preliminary factors that had to do with the dedication of this wall. Will you notice them with me in 27 through 30? The passage says in verse 27, at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites. Who would be the they of this verse? Well, verse 26 tells us Nehemiah and Ezra. So the two major leaders of the people of Israel in the city of Jerusalem, Nehemiah, the governor, and Ezra, the priest and scribe, these two men say to one another and to the people, in order to dedicate the wall, we need to find the people that are specialists in this field. And so it says in the 27th verse that they sought out the Levites from all their places. You can't appreciate the search unless you go back to chapter 11, Genesis chapter 12, verse 18. I'm sorry, it is 11:18. The previous chapter, the 18th verse, all the Levites in the holy city were 284. So they went to these 284 people and they pulled them out and they said, there's a job to be done before any more building of homes takes place. Another part of chapter 12 tells us that the Levites were all over the countryside, outside the wall. And so Ezra and Nehemiah, I'm sure they delegated some of this responsibility, sought out the Levites to come into the city to make their plans for dedication. Question, why the Levites? Why would they turn to a people and go through the trouble of finding people like this to dedicate a wall for the glory of God? Well, as so many of you already know, the Levites were the specialists in temple and tabernacle activities. They were what we would call the body of full-time Christian workers, those who made their living from the temple, from the tabernacle. They were obviously sons of Levi, and since the tribes had been divided, God had appointed the Levi tribe, the Levites, to carry on that process. So it stands to reason that when the wall had to be dedicated for the glory of God, they would use the Levites. But there is more than that. Will you notice the process, that is, the preliminaries as they were underway? It says that they found the Levites, they brought them into Jerusalem that they might celebrate the dedication with gladness. And here's the theme from now on. The Hebrew word means gaiety, mirth, pleasure, delight. They brought in this specialist group and they said, lead us in the celebration of joy. And then they added to the particulars the singing of hymns, the songs, and the instruments of song mentioned in verse 27, the cymbals, the harps, and the lyres. Now, this was quite an ensemble. People from all around, as we will notice in just a minute, specific choirs, the instruments that were to accompany the singing of the choirs led out in this celebration of joy and gaiety. You will notice that there was a special group, verse 28, called the Sons of the Singers. I chuckled as I read that. I wonder if that was one of the earlier singing groups, the Sons of the Singers. Maybe that was their title. But they were a group of people who had passed on to them the talents and the songs of the nation. These people were born into singing families, and they carried on their singing from one generation to the next, and that didn't get lost in the captivity in Babylon. If you have been raised in a family that sings, then you can smile on the inside as I can and remember the times when you sang, and it's interesting that it never breaks down. Your family is also singing. And are you ready? Your grandchildren will also, more than likely, be singing. Singers beget singers who do the same right down the line. That was true in the days of Israel. But there's more than singing. I want you to notice something very important in verse 30. And the priests and the Levites purified themselves. And they also purified the people, the gates, and the wall. It must not be overlooked that before there was one moment invested in celebration, there was time given to purification. I take it from the words, the people, that the singers were purified, that the wall, the gates, those that ministered were purified. What does that mean? Well, we're not told. But I'm sure that it had to do with some kind of sin offering. In order to carry on the celebration of the wall, their hearts had to be pure. To minister to other people, one's heart must be right before God. If you sing in this assembly, you will not have the impact on this congregation unless the heart is pure. If you minister in any capacity, before there can be effective ministry, there must be time spent in the cleansing of the heart.
Effective ministry always begins within the heart. You're listening to Insight for Living and another practical study in Nehemiah. Chuck Swindoll titled today's message, Happiness is a Walk on the Wall. It's message number 15 in a 16-part study. If you'd like to learn more about this series or this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. The study in Nehemiah was preached in Fullerton, California, long ago and before Insight for Living was even born. It's still quite relevant for today because the biblical lessons on leadership are timeless. But many times, the teaching material you enjoy on Insight for Living is brand new because Chuck Swindoll preaches to a congregation in Frisco, Texas, every Sunday morning. His sermons are fueled by and filled with God's grace. Here's Chuck.
The longer I live, the more I've grown to depend on God's grace for the moment. And I suspect that you might feel that same way. Recently, one of my colleagues at Insight for Living handed me a stack of comments from our listeners. I love it when that happens. While reading through each one of these notes, it occurred to me that none of us escapes our frail condition. Many describe seasons of loss, failure in their lives, secret battles, loneliness, deep disappointments, heartbreaks, and fractured relationships. Your stories touch me deeply. Gratefully, we're not alone. Who in today's world, other than God Himself, would meet us in these deepest places of sorrow? Who but Jesus would put His arm around us and say, "My grace is all you need." I can't tell you how many times these words have ministered to me. In fact, I've lost count on the number of times that Cynthia and I have had a day that's been beyond busy, and we've sort of dropped in bed that night saying to one another, "His grace is all we need." I treasure that promise, don't you? For millions around the world, Insight for Living has become their daily respite from the chaos, cares, and disappointments of life. It's where they hear the soothing words of affirmation, "My grace is all you need. My power," Jesus said, "works best in weakness." Because that's true, would you join in this all-out effort to tell the world about God's grace? December 31st will be here before we know it, marking the conclusion to yet another year of ministry. Your special end-of-the-year donation will empower us to provide hope to those who desperately need grace for the moment. So let me thank you in advance for responding with your generous gift today.
Responding to Chuck Swindoll and getting in touch with Insight for Living is easy. First, you can call us. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888. Or it might be quickest to give at insight.org/donate. Again, the number in the U.S. is 800-772-8888. By the way, if you're in a gift shopping mode, remember that Insight for Living offers a variety of creative gift ideas for any occasion. There are books by Chuck Swindoll, including the Swindoll Study Bible. Lots of great choices. Each one will inspire your loved one to draw upon God's grace. To learn what's available right now, go to insight.org/store. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us again next time when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called "Happiness is a Walk on the Wall," right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, "Happiness is a Walk on the Wall," was copyrighted in 1974, 1983, 1990, 2007, and 2016. And the sound recording was copyrighted in 2016 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.